Blog Talk Radio.
No music. Can you believe that? Am I right or wrong?
You're right. There's no music. There you go.
Everybody, Recruiting Animal here on April 23rd, 2014. I got to press that music button a little later. Maybe I'm pressing it too early. That accounts for the gap. Anyway, I'm going to get right to my little intro. Today I want to talk about titles and respect. Titles and respect. You know why? Because I was watching a movie this past week called The King's Speech. I know you all saw it 2 years ago. I just saw it now. And I thought it was surprisingly good. I don't think too many movies are very good. I thought this was very good. It was about Queen Elizabeth's father. You know, the Queen of England is our Queen here in Canada. She had a dad, and he used to be the King. But before that, he was a prince in the 1930s. His name was Albert, and he had a speech impediment. He stuttered very badly, and it was very embarrassing when he had to make a speech, and he was a public figure, so he did have to make speeches. So his wife, she was pretty bright, she took him to a speech therapist. Now, Prince Albert had an older brother, and when their father, the king, died, I know this is hard to follow, but stick with me. They both had a father who was the king. The king died. The older brother became king, but he wanted to marry his American girlfriend, and she was a divorced woman. That wasn't allowed. So the speech therapist started telling Prince Albert, hey, you got to get ready to take over. And that made the prince nervous because he couldn't speak properly. So he told the speech therapist, how dare you advise me, sir? How dare you? I am the son of a king. And you're the son of a jackalope from the outback of Australia. So what we have here is a man who couldn't even do what any ordinary person could do, speak properly, and still he's pulling rank on his service provider so he can degrade him into submission. And the same kind of thing happens today. A few weeks ago, I'm sure I told you already, I was in the doctor's office, and the doctor says to me, can I call you Animal? And I said, what do you want me to call you? And he says, Dr. Balanchine. And I said, well, then you can call me Mr. Animal. He wanted to call me by my first name, but wanted me to call him by his title, as if I couldn't remember what his job was. My answer to him was, phooey on you, sir. Your mother might worship you, but I'm not going to. And what I'm talking about, that's relevant to recruiting, too. I think I've told you before, my good friend, J.D. Jason Davis, is a fearless recruiter. He will say anything to anybody. But he told me that when he started out and he had a phone peep, titles like director and vice president, who were 20 or 30 years older than him, he was scared. So he resolved that he would never, ever call people by their titles. He would always call them by their first name so he wouldn't feel subordinate to them. And that's a lesson for you. Don't humble yourself to anybody. That's a lesson from Jerry. Jerry, what show is this?
The Recruiting Animal Show!
There, Jerry, or, you know, am I just hearing things wrong?
You're hearing things. You're hearing things. No, man, my voice is perfect. My throat is in fine shape. I was ready for that. I was practicing earlier in the day. Want me to do it again?
No.
Want me to do it again?
Did you wait 30 seconds after I finished talking till
you started
shouting?
Yes, I did. Not 30 seconds, about 10 seconds.
Yeah, that's because you had a, you know,
hey.
It didn't work that way. No,
you
that wasn't good.
You do your part, I do mine. Period.
Yeah, play the tape, in other words. That's the best thing to do.
No.
Look,
Hey, does anybody out there have the Kings of Leon pre-sale offer code for their tour? Anybody?
Jerry,
anybody?
I want to talk. Yeah, okay, you can ask later in the show, okay?
No, well, I don't need to ask later. I just ask then.
Yeah, before we get to the guests, and it's a special show today, there's two guests next week too. But anyway, I noticed that you received some support this week for your claim that LinkedIn is scanning your Gmail without permission. Stacey Donovan-Zapar says you probably gave LinkedIn permission without realizing it. But the Resume Strategy and Pauline Johnson over in Australia, they say the same problem happened to them, and they are sure that they are not responsible. They're sure that LinkedIn
Absolutely.
Is going through their mail without permission. Stacey says they're probably wrong. It's a conspiracy theory. Any comments on that?
All I have to say is they somehow have tricked me into giving them access to my Gmail account. My 8-year-old daughter, who only has an email account, so I can put Google Play Store apps on her little iPad, notepad, whatever that deal is, she sends nobody any email at all. Somehow, LinkedIn is digging through my contacts, and I have not given them permission for that.
Okay, and
we have international agreement to that. People in Canada are pissed about it. People in Australia, people here in Los Estados Unidos are pissed about it. We're sick of it.
Yeah, and so what happened, how you noticed it, I'm going to move on, but you saw LinkedIn asking you to invite your little daughter to join the
Yeah,
system,
you know how
right?
it comes up. It shows people that you may know, and it says connect with them, which is, that never really fazed me because I assume, okay, they're on LinkedIn, we're on LinkedIn, I don't know. Well, my daughter is not on LinkedIn, so it's asking me to invite her to join LinkedIn and then connect. So several things there are way out of whack. And Stacy, being most LinkedIn woman, has an obligation.
Enough. We've got a lawyer on the show today, and although I didn't ask him to prepare for that, we're gonna ask him about it, but not right away. Charles Chucky Krugel, are you here? I put you off so many times, I'm wondering if you finally showed up.
Yes, Anna, I'm here.
Hi, great. Great. Thank you. Thank you
hey,
for
Charles,
coming. I threw up my schedule.
Charles, do you have the Kings of Leon tour pre-sale password?
No, I don't. Sorry.
Darn it. Anybody?
Okay. Nobody's answered yet. Now, listen, for the second part of the show, we're going to have Chucky on for 30 minutes or so, and then we're going to bring on Larry Lebofsky, newcomer to the show. Larry, are you here now?
I am here.
Okay. So the three of us, Chuck,
can I ask
Larry
if he has the pre-sale code?
I think he heard you already, okay?
Yeah, I might not have admitted it.
Okay.
Well, we're going to open up with April Showers, okay? Charles, Chuck, you're pretty good at singing, so you're going to sing April Showers. You know that song, right?
No, I don't, actually.
Are you
kidding me? It's an actual song?
No, I'm sure.
Everybody knows it. Larry, do you know it? April Showers, just the first two verses.
You know, I'm in Florida. We don't have showers.
Oh, I'll sing it myself. Can you guys hum at least just to show you're in it, in the show, part of the show, okay?
I'll mumble along.
You follow me, you'll hum. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Though April showers, come on, may come your way. They bring the flowers that bloom in May. Yeah! So if it's raining, have no regrets, because it isn't raining rain, you know, it isn't raining rain. It's raining violets, and when you see clouds upon the hills, nobody knows that song, you will see crowds of daffodils. Oh, stop. No.
First time I ever heard that.
Oh, come on.
Well,
it's
hopefully
the last. It's a Al Jolson song. Didn't you see Jolson Sings Again or anything like that? Oh,
no.
Gee whiz. Charles,
dude,
can you introduce
yourself?
You are
so out of touch, it's unbelievable. Oh, my God.
You know, I'm getting into silent movies. I never thought I really would, but I was watching The Jazz Singer on YouTube the other day.
Yeah, maybe you should start with the theme song from some of your favorite silent movies next week. Try that.
Well, you know what? I think that's from The Jazz Singer, 1927, the first real kind of talkie, popular talkie. Okay, Charles, can you introduce yourself, or do I have to do it?
Doesn't matter. I'm Chuck Krugel. I'm a management site labor and employment lawyer based in Chicago. Anything else you
Chicago.
Want? Anything
that,
else?
Is that how people say Chicago? Chicago? My father's a foreigner, and he says Chicago. He sounds just as good as you. Okay? Chicago. Okay. And your name is CharlesAKrugel.com.
Yeah.
That's Charles AKRUGEL.com. Great guy.
That's right.
Always on the show, okay? Got a bunch of questions. You know, people found out that you're on the show. They started peppering me with questions that you didn't prepare for. So we'll see if you can answer them. The first thing, though, that we want to talk about is severance packages. My friend's son got an offer from a company, and he saw when the offer came that they put all new employees on a three-month probation period. He got kind of nervous. I mean, he's got three kids. He wondered, what if they let him go? What's his severance package going to be? And I think he was due 7 weeks from his old employer, right? So he sent me an email, and I never dealt with that issue. And obviously, he was being placed by a recruiter. The recruiter hadn't raised the issue in advance either. So, like, should I go on, or you want to step in here and tell us what's the story with these severance packages? It sounds like an important issue, but one I've never heard raised on this show in 7 years. So what about it? Is it an important issue?
Severance is an important issue, yeah, but it's something that's negotiable between the parties. So the United States has no law regarding severance. Canada might, but I'm not aware of it.
Well, everything here is provincial as well. It goes province. Most things are province by province, just like it's state by state down there with you guys, okay? But the thing is, what I'm wondering, so what happened was he sent me an email. I said, I'm going to do a little research on it, and I saw some other lawyers here in Toronto. They have articles on their websites, you know, what do you do if you know, with severance? Who's making that noise? Stop it, okay? Anyway, so it turned out he talked to the recruiter. The recruiter talked to the company. They said, okay, we'll continue this 7 weeks from your old employer. Should everybody who's, you know, being offered a job talk to their...
Yeah, they should raise it with the new employer, with the recruiter, or they should at least get the terms up front so they know one way or the other whether there is severance or isn't.
So there isn't. What about this whole idea of a probation period? Is that legit?
It's largely, I think it's become antiquated. Companies used to do it when maybe unemployment comp wasn't as big of a factor. Now with unemployment comp, depending on the state you're in, like in Illinois, for example, where I'm in, you're eligible for unemployment comp as of the 31st day of employment. So the idea that there's a 90-day probation period doesn't really mean that much if the company is going to try to get rid of you before 30 days. In order to avoid paying unemployment comp. So it's...
Oh, you mean that's the thing. They let you go within 3 months, so they don't have to pay you any severance or any special, have any special commitments to you? What happens after 3 months legally?
Legally, nothing. It just depends on what it says relative to that probation period. It's sort of like a fiction in some ways. Or maybe it's a human resources management tool in order to say, hey, you know, we've got this time period, 6 months, 3 months, whatever, for a trial period to see if we're right for you, you're right for us, and then, you know, they let them go, but that doesn't really affect any legal issues such as filing for unemployment comp or discrimination or anything like that.
But what about wrongful dismissal, though? Here, I'm pretty sure if you get let go summarily, all of a sudden, for people who don't know what summarily means, that you can claim wrongful dismissal. Is this three-month probation period a way to get around that? Look, you're just here on a trial basis for the first 3 months. We have the right to let you go without any notice, and, you know, we won't pay any penalty for doing so. Is that essentially what they're trying to do? Sounds like you're not familiar with that idea.
Well, it's possible that I'm familiar with it. It's possible that's what they're trying to do, but it depends on whether, again, it depends on the jurisdiction, the state, whether or not the state itself recognizes wrongful termination. So, for example, in Illinois and a lot, and other employment and will states, they don't recognize wrongful termination. So, therefore, the whole concept of firing somebody after the 90-day or after whatever their probationary period is, being then, you know, equating that to wrongful termination doesn't mean anything if the state itself doesn't or if the jurisdiction doesn't recognize wrongful termination.
Yeah, I got a feeling that's what it is here. But what am I supposed to do then when I'm taking a job description or an order from the client? Say, look, if you let this guy go, what's that kind of severance you're going to pay that person? I've worked with lots of different companies. No one has ever made that an issue. I'm wondering if it sounds really negative, like a bad thing to bring up right at the start. Any of the recruiters on the line right now want to comment on that? Should we talk about, you know, severance pay right at, you know, at the first stage of the job?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, I personally, I mean, quite frankly, you know, that's an issue that I always leave between the, you know, the candidate's lawyer and the company's lawyer.
Who's this, Lebowski? Is this Lebowski?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, well, let's just say it's me, Larry. Okay, Larry Lebowski. So you don't talk about it?
No, not really. I mean, if it comes into play, it's usually at an executive level, and everybody's lawyer takes care of it. But I think only three times it's really come up during a deal I've worked on in 15 years.
Hey, yeah, Adam, am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
You know what? If somebody doesn't make it through a 90-day probation period, it's obviously performance-related. I feel like there should only be severance if somebody's let go because of downsizing, the company's not doing well, whatever. If somebody's let down in a probation period, it's because they didn't perform. No severance as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's your moral judgment. If you've got three kids and they're calling you up with a recruiter saying, hey, you want to come and work for us? And it's a big risk to say, you know, if it doesn't work out here, I'm not going to have any way to pay my way. My family's going to, you know, be in trouble immediately. So I think
the company should have to pay more. So the company should have to pay more because you didn't perform? I mean, really, as a company owner, it's not my fault that you have three kids. If you come in and perform, you have a job. If you don't, you don't. That should particularly apply to our industry. We're supposed to keep a recruiter on board that's not performing because they have three kids at home. I'm sorry, I didn't make your three kids.
You know what? If you're asking someone to take a risk and change jobs, I think you have to provide that cushion. And you know,
that's ridiculous.
Animal, this is Chuck. Just to add something real quickly, hiring somebody is a business transaction, and I've always been taught that anytime you enter into a business transaction, you have the negotiations that, you know, introducing the transaction itself, what goes on during the relationship, and then you also negotiate an exit strategy. And in my mind, severance, all those issues are part of the exit strategy. Now, the problem with hiring somebody is that it's a purely a human thing. You're relying on you're talking about personality and a lot of intangibles, and there's an imbalance of power between the parties, the person doing the hiring and the person being the candidate being hired. So they're not in a position really to talk about maybe an exit strategy because, as Lebowski was saying, it does seem sort of negative or might, you know, be indicative of bad attitude or bad personality or something like that. But it's important. It's the exit strategy is as important as anything else. And I think people have to be adult about it or, you know, have to, you know, own up to meet that challenge and try to work out the severance, separation, you know, all those types of issues.
To me, if somebody asks about a severance package within the interview process, either if I'm hiring them for my company or for a client, that's a huge red flag. If I was hiring for my company and somebody asked me about a severance package, I probably wouldn't hire them based on that question.
Well, this is Larry again. I mean, do you believe that there's, you know, a certain level that people are, I hate to use the word entitled, but entitled to a severance package? I mean, for me, it only comes up when I'm dealing with an EVP or C-level position.
What I believe is this. If I'm hiring a recruiter, I set those expectations out when I hire the person in the interview process. They agree that they're going to meet those expectations. If they don't, to me, there's no reason I need to continue to pay them because they don't.
Okay.
Now,
I want to wrap this one up because I've got more. Listen, I got more questions for Charles, but I got to tell you something. If you're taking the person's salary into consideration, if the person's making $100,000, you're not usually going to offer less unless you know there's some other way you're compensating them with a great opportunity or a bigger title, something like that. But it rarely goes that you're offering them less. And if they've got a 7-week severance package as part of their current position, that's part of their compensation package, and I think you have to take that into consideration. And since this happened to me, I'm thinking that it's this came to my attention, I'm thinking it's fair. The candidate doesn't have to discuss it in the interview, but you know what? It's something the recruiter might want to check on, just to make sure everything is A-OK. And I don't think a candidate should go into a new position blind with a possibility of being summarily terminated without any kind of cushion or, safety net. And anybody got anything else that they haven't said that we should be aware of?
Well,
a big wake-up call for me. Go ahead.
Yeah, for
Animal, if you
Larry.
Lived in the U.S., you would have voted for Obama, wouldn't you?
Maybe.
Did you vote for Rob Ford?
No, I didn't vote for Rob Ford. I didn't vote in the last municipal election. But I got to tell you something. I've been sympathetic with him because I think people hate him because he's fat. I think I said this on the show before. However, I would not vote for him next time. I will not vote for him in November. So I will not vote for Rob Ford. He's drunk. So go ahead, Larry. Did you have anything else final to say? Final statements on this issue?
No, just contrary to what was said before, if it is going to be an issue, if someone does have it as their current compensation, I don't see it as necessarily a red flag unless it comes later. If it comes up in the very beginning, at least I can let the client know if it's going to be a deal breaker. Make it a deal breaker before he interviews. But it would be good to know as early in the process as possible.
Okay.
I'd like to add two real quickly. I think the recruiter should take the point on that type of issue and really work it out ahead of time with the employer. So,
yeah.
You know what? I don't know how far ahead of time.
It's like a non-compete. You got to know if it's going to be an issue, and mm-hmm. best to know the very first conversation.
Okay. Now let me move on. Chuck, did I tell you to prepare for blind reference checks? Or do you know anything about
it?
Can we discuss? Okay.
Yeah, you know about that.
What I call blind reference checks, some people call it backdoor reference checks. It's, this guy Frank on the Facebook group, he said, at least two times a year I lose a deal because, some recruiter on my team has a candidate and they'll call up a vendor or somebody who knows him or her professionally and just say, what do you think of this person? And it gets out. It leaks out that the person's looking for a job. And, I think that's a valid way to find out about somebody, calling up the people that he or she might know and, getting feedback on him or her on their professional life. But it sounds like it's dangerous. If something gets out and the current employer, for instance, finds out they're looking, all hell could break loose. What's your experience with that, Charles? Do you know anything about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much a legal issue as much as it is like an HR management type issue that basically the recruiter should exercise discretion and should also ask the client and the employer to exercise discretion too. So, sometimes recruiters, they won't disclose the identity of the company, the client, things like that. So I think that's part of the discretion that goes along with it.
Okay, so you think it's legitimate to call up under the table reference checks, and the candidate can't come back to you. Somebody comes to him or her and says, "Hey, I heard you're looking for a job. How do you know? Oh, Joe Blow told me. How'd he know? Recruiter called him for reference checks." They can't sue you. Is that right?
Well, they could sue you if it's defamatory, slanderous, libelous, that type of stuff. So if they intentionally mislead, intentionally lie about the person, they could still be sued for that.
The idea here is just that the fact that you're open, you're considering another position, that's the issue. Is that something you could sue over, that maybe your boss is going to find out that, you're looking at another job?
Probably not. You might be able to go after a person for what's called tortious interference with a contract, assuming there is a contract with the employer in place anyway. But other than that, there's probably not much of a position to stand on, you know, regarding suing somebody for that, especially if
you're
talking about professional type
issues. You can call. It's not unreasonable to call up somebody that you think, you know, if you're in the phalange industry or whatever, you know, you're selling plumbing supplies, and you say, you know what, I'm going to call some suppliers, see if they know anything about this guy. That's fair, right? Even if you didn't get those names.
It's legal. I don't know, but, you know, the fairness, it depends on how you go about it. You're getting into ethical issues then. So if, you know,
yeah, ethical issues
this,
I'm not worried about. Legal issues is what you're here for. You're not a philosopher
legal
on this show, okay? You're a lawyer, okay? That's all I want from you. A couple other issues. Did I have anything else that I asked you about? Because I'll throw a couple in that were unplanned. Anything else you came prepared for?
Just one thing on the under the table reference checking. If all you're asking about is their professional skills, demeanor, attitude, that's fine. That's legal. If you get into issues such as creditworthiness, you know, their ability to handle money, or, you know, were they a criminal? Did they do anything that, you know, they could have been arrested for? Things like that. You're getting into murkier waters then, and there might be you might have to disclose ahead of time that you're going to be asking references about those issues, those types of issues,
okay,
creditworthiness.
Tom Bolt told me just before the show to ask you about this. He said, what was the name of the company? Bed Bath & Beyond got in trouble because they had a ban on workers who had a criminal past, a conviction against them. Apparently, it's illegal to discriminate against people because of a criminal record. Is that true?
It varies. Generally speaking, in the U.S., you cannot discriminate on the basis of an arrest record. It can only be on criminal convictions.
But you can.
I'm sorry?
So you can't discriminate against someone who's got a criminal record, not an arrest record, a conviction record.
Yeah, to a great extent you can. The
equal if you read that story, Animal, they said it was specific to the state of New York.
Yeah, under New York law, employers are barred from disqualifying any prospective hire simply on the basis of a criminal history. Such blanket discrimination is illegal in several states and cities and may also violate federal civil rights law, according to the New York-based National Employment Law Project.
Well, it hasn't been determined that some of the states are going in that direction, yes. It hasn't been determined that it violates federal civil rights laws yet, because the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is trying to crack down on background checking, criminal histories, that type of stuff. But they haven't issued any laws. They haven't issued any regulations on it yet. All they've issued is guidance. National Employment Lawyers Association is a plaintiff side association. They deal with employees and employee attorneys. So I think that's natural that they would come down on criminal background checking in that regard. You know, that they would say it's illegal or violates civil. Well, not illegal, but they say violates civil rights.
So they've got a bias in favor of the employee. That's what you're saying there, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Don't trust what they say. Okay, final thing.
On the other hand, from HR, let me just add, from an HR management standpoint, I do believe that companies should only do criminal background checking when it's relevant to the job. So there's a lot of companies out there that do it without having any pertinence to the position that they're hiring for.
What position isn't it pertinent for?
Well, if you're in a back office and you're not around kids or not around handling money or things like that, then it might not be relevant.
I've always been under the impression that companies need to be consistent. If you background check one, you got to background check everybody. That's not true?
Not anymore. They're going away. Because of the EEOC guidance, I think that positions we're moving away from that. And now you're looking at more of a customized or more of a position pertinent type of inquiry. So if you're working around kids, like you're a teacher or something like that, yeah, then that would be relevant.
Background check for people that were in the hiring process who they've actually made an offer to. Is that not anymore?
Well, no. What happens is that you're supposed to, under Fair Credit Reporting Act and the Fair and Accurate Credit Transactions Act, which are federal law, U.S. laws, you're supposed to disclose ahead of time that you're going to be doing a criminal background check. and then you're if the background check comes up positive that yes, there's been convictions, the applicant's supposed to have an opportunity to rebut it or provide other information. So.
Right, but you don't have to give it to everybody who's applied or that you've interviewed, just the person that you're making an offer to, right?
Yeah, that's right, just the person you're making an offer to.
Okay, Chuck E. Yeah, so Travis, last question for Chuck. Go ahead. Travis, did you want to say something?
It's Alan.
I got a question.
Alan, oh,
Alan
sorry.
Has a question.
I've got a question before that.
Can I borrow anybody's Citibank credit card? Because that's the only way I can get these pre-sale Kings of Leon tickets, and I'm an American Express guy.
Do that on the after show, okay? Do that on the after show.
So,
any other final questions for Chuck before
yeah,
I let
really
him go?
Quick.
I got Lebowski here too.
When you have an applicant, when somebody's applying for a job, when someone's applying for a job through an applicant tracking system, they're an applicant. They're not a candidate until the company's considering them usually. But a lot of times they ask for a Social Security number. Years ago, AT&T caught a lot of flack because people were like, I don't want to give them this until they're interested in me. What's your opinion on that? And what happened, if you can't give a social or you don't want to give a social, it won't accept your application. But if you're a worried about privacy, you're just, you would. I'll send you my resume, but I don't want to send you all this stuff just to apply for
a
job.
Is that a huge discussion, Chuck? Is that a long discussion?
No, I don't think it's a long discussion.
Okay, go
ahead. Basically, it's the company's prerogative to ask for that information in the application portion of the selection process. So if they want to, they can, and if they want to exclude you because you don't provide that, they can. Frankly,
okay.
I agree that it's troubling because I wouldn't want to give my every time I'm asked to give my Social Security number, the first thing I think of is like, what are they going to do? You know, what are you going to use it for? What are you going to do with it?
Well, not even them, but what happens if it gets? What happens if somebody else gets a hold of it?
Yeah, they hack it if they hack into the system or something like that.
Yeah, but let me ask
a
question there. If you don't give it, will they just rule you out?
Most likely.
Yeah, I mean you're in a tough spot there. If you're not dealing with an individual, it's just a machine, and you won't give that number. I mean, you're screwed. We'll have to discuss that again. Charles Chuck Krugel. Charles A. Krugel. K-R-U-G-E-L. He's the employment lawyer of choice in Chicagoland. Okay? We'll have you back sooner. Obviously, you know, people called in with questions today. I wasn't sure they were going to.
Thanks, Chuck.
Only gave you half the show.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you, Charles.
Thank you, Animal. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
There was some pretty strong pre-show advertisement today. You'll see an influx of callers.
Yeah, I noticed that Mike Astringer said he only called in because you begged him, like he does what Jerry Albright wants. He loves Jerry so much, okay?
Well, everybody does. Can you blame him?
Who doesn't love Jerry?
I had the impression he hated your guts, Jerry. Okay,
who doesn't want to go to the Kings of Leon concert with me? If you have the pre-sale number, call me with it.
Okay. Now we're going to introduce a newcomer to the show. Somebody I chat with on Twitter all the time. His name, I just knew him as Lebowski, as in sort of the big Lebowski, but his name is really Larry Lebowski. He's got 15 years of agency experience, including partner level. In Florida, he says he's gone, I'm going to do the introduction, he's gone from IT lackey to CEO search, niche, MRI, lots of awards, 4 million plus in lifetime billings. Larry Lebowski, come on down.
Hey, how are you? Good to be here. Thanks.
Is that a fair introduction? I virtually read what you told me. Is that legit?
Yeah, no, that's good. I'm also a member of the 100,000 club. I've kept track. I've been lied to over 100,000 times.
Sweet.
Oh, okay. Great. Okay. Nice. And his name on Twitter is LEBOF, as in Fred, SKY. Larry Lebowski. And
Did you vote for Obama, Larry?
What's that?
Did you vote for Obama?
Don't answer that question. This is not.
No, I want to go political with this. Come on.
No way.
Come on.
No way. You do it in the after show, Larry. Jerry, we're not having a political discussion now on this portion of the show. And I will mute you if you insist, okay? Don't push me on that. You know
ban me for life. I dare you.
I let you have a political discussion once, and it was a big snore. I thought it was boring. It wrecked the show. Okay, now look.
And
you
obviously,
know,
the show's
gonna
never
on,
recovered.
Larry's going to be on for the latter part of this show. Larry's going to be on for the next 25 minutes on this show. And then I've got a technology guest next week, and usually I think only 30 minutes is good for them. So Larry's going to be on. We're splitting his hour between this show and the next show. So
Larry, you're getting screwed.
You really are, Larry. I would
protest. This is ridiculous.
No,
I'd protest.
He's got time to get used to it this time. He's got lots of time to get acclimated to the show, and then he'll come back next week. You know, they all come on and they say, oh, next time I'll know better. I goofed up this, I goofed up that. So he'll have time to get used to the show. Next week, if he's no good, he's got no excuse at all. But the thing is, I didn't prepare a big list of normal questions. I said, Larry, what do you want to talk about? And he gave me a list. And he said he can discuss all kinds of stories about everything. He says, after 15 years, I can speak to almost anything in agency recruiting. But I'll suggest. One of the things he suggested was alternative marketing. I didn't even know what you meant by that. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I was trained in the MRI system of the MPC, where you take a candidate to market. I mean, for me, and I'm a big proponent of small tweaks to get large results, I started finding that if I wanted to set myself apart, it really started with the way that I approached a potential client. So the way that I've marketed the past 10 years has been and RSS feeds has made this much easier, but I'll follow a dozen different websites specific to my niche in the industry, so that when I'm making a cold call now, it is usually with some type of frame of reference taking right from a PR piece. And it'll go along the lines of, hey, CEO, we don't know each other, but I read about your deal with company so-and-so, which is a client of mine, hence maybe we should have a conversation because you know how well they've done. So I've always tried to start a cold call and make it a little bit warm with some piece of legitimacy, and I found that anybody who has a background with recruiting firms is usually taken aback because they've never really heard somebody coming from an industry or, you know, who even seems to really know about it and who isn't leading with a candidate and asking for a place.
Aren't you using RSS feeds, but most companies don't have blogs. What are you seeing in the RSS feed? Public, you know, statements. What do they call them? PR announcements,
well,
stuff like that.
Well, the RSS feeds I'm talking about are for more like aggregator websites. So, for instance, I'm in the electronic payments business. There's a great website called PaymentsNews.com, and they're following everybody else. If you follow four or five of those aggregators, chances are you're getting 95% of the stories that are published, and they're usually PR pieces, but it is certainly possible to get, you know, other opinion news sources. But
okay,
you know,
I want to hear a real life story, because you told me you got plenty of stories. Don't tell me now you don't have a real life story where you did this, and I want to hear one where you weren't working for the other company that they're doing business. There was no relationship with this company, directly or indirectly, nothing. I want to hear a story of how this worked. I don't care if you got business out of it or not. I just want to hear how you do this.
Well,
and, you know, do you leave a voicemail for the CEO, or do you always call the CEO? Who do you call in the company? I want to know exactly how it's done. I want
usually start with the CEO, or if somebody's quoted in the article who's not the CEO, probably ask for them because they were the person who's quoted in the article. I'll consider them the internal subject matter expert. But, you know, a client that paid off huge dividends.
No, I want a story. Can you hear me? Read my lips. A real story. Not a general one. Not a general story. A specific story. You got one up your sleeve?
Yeah, so a client that, I mean, was a big payoff for 5 years, I mean, was nothing more than seeing them in press talking about being at a prepaid card conference and exhibiting for the first time. I had spent 3 years in that particular niche, called the CEO, left a message, and it was along the lines of, hey, I read where you said you were going to be
on that panel and such a trade show, given the fact that on your website it doesn't even mention anything having to do with that solution, I'm going to make a leap of faith that you're looking to get into that market, and I've helped such and such companies do so. I got a call back there, and that led to basically staffing an entire department because I caught them right when they were first publishing their thoughts but hadn't actually done something in that industry. So, you know, it's a question of reaching a company in the planning stage as opposed to once they've built an actual
search. Anthony J. Meany and I used to work a lot in the hardware, middlemen. I forget what they called them at the time. So we used to No. I forget that there was a name for all these guys. Anyway, so we used to read the trade journals for that market, and if we saw an article with someone's name in it, we would call them up. And that's essentially what you're doing, right?
Yeah, I look for foreign companies that finally get press in the United States and offer up myself as somebody who can help them get there. Hey, I noticed
so you'll call
that you
them,
don't actually
you'll call
have
them
clients
in, their,
in that market.
You'll call them in their home office in another country. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm trying to anticipate their future hires. And typically, you know, the press release tracking is when they're ready to do something.
I don't want to beat this to death, but what if you haven't done any work in an industry yet? You want to break into an industry. Is this still a legitimate way to go about it?
You can approach it. I mean, you're going to look for some similarity, but say you don't have industry experience, but they're talking about they got an A round of fundraising to put into new products. If you've worked with maybe product managers, I mean, you can call and draw a dotted line there, but it certainly works best if you're a noted figure in their industry who they can look up online.
Okay. So you mentioned trade shows, and you told me that, you know, one of the other topics you can discuss are trade shows and PR conversion. Is that what you just referred to?
PR is what I just spoke with. With the trade shows, I mean, that's been a gold mine and a lot of, you know, and it's been a real differentiator because most people haven't actually met real life recruiters. You show up to their trade shows, that gives you an additional level of credibility. But what happens is I try to get lists of participants in trade shows, go after the VPs to C-level, and typically 2 weeks before a trade show in my industry, we'll send out a large email along the lines of, hey, I saw that you're going to be at such and such a trade show. 10% of the participants are my clients. Would love to talk with you or meet you while you're there. Followed up a week later, which is a week before the trade show, with a call along the same lines. I've never really been into walking up to people cold in a trade show. However, if you've got that little bit of introduction, you walk up to their table, and I find that leads to a lot of breakfasts and a lot of businesses that wouldn't have just happened over the phone. It makes me a lot more comfortable when I've already had two volleys of introduction.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? You gotta don't moderate your speaking so much. You know, somebody's doing business in the background. Is it Mike A. Stringer by any chance?
Who's interrupting?
Who is that? And there's somebody got the phone open, and they're talking to somebody else in their office. Okay,
come on.
Anybody want to talk to Larry about that?
That was not me, Animal. My phone is muted.
Okay,
thank you,
Mike. Anybody? Yeah, people are – okay, you're talking a bit in a measured way. Like Kathy Manis is telling me on Twitter, you know, everybody's bored. She says she's bored. Now, that's not always a good indicator. I like the information you're giving, but you got to pep it up. I thought Lebowski would be bopping me, okay? So you just got to add some passion to what you're saying. If I say you need passion, and I don't like that word, that means you need to add a little passion, okay? So anybody else ever do that before I move on? Anybody else ever, you know, go to a trade show and pick up clients there? You ever pick up candidates at trade shows, Lebowski? And, you know, remember, say it in a boppy kind of way. Say it in a little boppy.
I got laid once from a trade show. Does that count?
Yeah, I go with a bevy of naked women to the trade shows, and it really produces a lot of uptick in my business.
Mm-hmm. Mike, if you only got laid once.
You ever pick up candidates at trade shows? That's what I'm asking. Well, or is it just clients?
Well, sure.
Really,
I mean, they come to you, but I make a point of letting them know I'm not at the trade show to recruit candidates. I don't want to actually be, you know, banned from future shows.
You know, before LinkedIn, we used to go to these trade shows. Anthony and I used to go as well, and we would sort of like pretend to be talking to each other and looking at people's badges. And, you know, it's really hard to read a badge when someone's walking by you, but we used to go to a lot of them and do that, right, try to get the names of everybody at the booth. It was a long time ago. Okay.
Hey, Animal.
So, yeah.
Animal. Derek,
what?
Is with us. He hasn't been here in a while, and it sounds like he's got something to say. Have you opened up his line?
Everybody's open, aren't they? Okay. 262 was closed by accident. Okay. Everybody's open now. Anybody's on the line is open. Does someone want to ask Larry Lebofsky a question or say anything about anything?
Anybody?
No. Okay. He doesn't want to. You're making a big show for him. Okay. Now, what about you say you have lots of stories about
Animal?
The whole... yeah? Hello?
Well, no, I wasn't sure if I was muted in. I was just curious, did he just say that if somebody comes up and talks to him and might be a possible candidate, he turns them away just because he's at a trade show?
I don't turn them away, but I'll ask to continue the discussion, I mean, you know, through a normal channel after the show. The one thing you don't want to ever be caught doing at a trade show is actually trying to, you know, source a candidate at the actual booth. Their boss could very easily complain to the people who throw the show.
Oh, really? Yeah.
However,
so
if you take
a
walk,
trade show.
Walk
I like
after
it.
The show, obviously, you know, that'll happen.
Okay. You said you have lots of stories about the unholy trinity of recruiters, drugs, and alcohol. I've never heard one story about that. Are they funny stories?
Maybe it's because I started in San Francisco, maybe because you're in Canada, but... yeah, I think I've only found 10% of agency recruiters who didn't have some type of vice. You haven't found the same thing?
No.
Here's a little tip for you, Lebofsky. Animal has not left his crib in 13 years. So it's a different... I mean, it's just a whole different thing.
No, but the thing is, since with all the social media, I know tons of recruiters, and I you know, I guess they're not going to announce it on Twitter, but, you know, I just don't get the impression, except for maybe, you know, some things that Mike Astringer says, that nobody's weird.
Don't people usually come into recruiting because they're not, you know, normally fit to do anything else, but they're smart?
You know, that might be true, but I used to work in an office where there was like 8 of us, and the people all smoked. But I didn't think
did
that
you
any
smoke?
Of them were, you know. No.
Did you smoke?
What did they
it was
smoke?
Terrible. They smoked cigarettes. It was real bad before they banned it here. It was really bad. And, you know, but none of them I was aware of had problems with alcohol or drugs. There were weird personalities. Almost everyone, I would say, was a misfit. But they weren't members of that Holy Trinity that you mentioned. Okay?
And you know what? I think I'm a weird animal, and my opinions are not valued. I can't hang up.
Okay, you raised that
I'm
thing
completely
about
offended.
Getting late.
I am offended.
Don't be offended. Well, you can defriend me again if you're offended. I don't
How
care.
How can anybody from New Jersey be offended, ever?
Yeah, I'm really not. I don't give a shit.
Okay, look. You said there's small tweaks. Maybe we'll talk about that next week. You said there's habits and telltale signs of a good agency versus a bad agency. So I'm assuming you have a lot of things in your pocket that you're thinking of already. You don't have to start thinking about those things. What are they? These telltale signs of a good versus a bad agency, recruiting agency.
Most of I come from the MRI system, so you get a lot of family-owned businesses, and I mean, you got to look carefully at those because they're often lifestyle companies, and
you know, you've got kids involved and so forth. So you want to look at, if you're in a small family business, you want to look at what the kids are doing. I mean, are they in some back office job where they can't hurt somebody, or are they the big biller in the firm? Big difference when it comes to that. You want to look at the internet research function in any firm you're thinking of joining. Does it exist? You know, it's like a marketing function in most companies. Some companies think it's nice to have an internet recruiter. I'm sure you've been over it on the show, how important that is in this day and age.
You mean a sourcer. Hold on. Let's get our terms right. So, first thing you're saying, if it's a family-owned firm, you know, what is it about you're saying about that? They're bad altogether? You don't want to go to a family-owned firm, or it's
no,
only
I'm
bad?
No, I'm saying
they're not
necessarily bad altogether. I mean, I've only worked for family-owned firms. Well, that's not true, but most of the time I've worked for family-owned firms. However, I mean, there's a big difference between an owner who's 65 years old taking a distribution each month and not caring if 9 out of 10 people who he hires don't work out, between that and an owner who is directly involved in the management of the firm, maybe still working a desk and so forth. So a lot of variety when you've got the family-owned business. You want to make sure there's a level of commitment from the owner. Otherwise, you're probably going to walk into some type of problem.
It sounds like the real issues there is old owner versus young owner. Am I right about that?
Yeah, but I've seen owners who are 70 years old who are still into it, you know, every single day. And, you know, I've seen young owners who inherit the business and then don't continue to work it. So I don't really think that's a clear indication of bigger issues like nepotism, for instance. But you got to look at it. I think anybody joining a firm, the best thing they can do is search LinkedIn and find and interview people who used to work there, but who worked there for at least 2 years before they left. Because, I mean, as you know, most recruiters wash out in a year. There's probably a story if somebody was at a company 2 to 4 years, long enough to really know their area and to, you know, be into large billings. Why did they leave at 2 to 4 years? Those are the people who I'd go after an interview if I was looking at an agency firm.
So let's say you find Bill Smith. You find Bill Smith or Steve Jones or somebody like that on LinkedIn. He or she was there. Steve Jones was there for 4 years and left. You find out where he is right now. You give him a call. What's the first thing you say to him?
First question is, why did you leave? I mean, at a point where most people start coasting.
Now, how would you introduce yourself?
I would say that I was looking, you know, at a job in that agency, saw them there, and if it's not going to, you know, be some type of conflict of interest, you know, love to hear their thoughts before I make a move that, you know, could be great, could make a mistake.
Okay, and they say, yeah, go ahead. What's your first question? I saw you were there 4 years and left.
My first question is, I mean, usually when somebody's been there as long as you have, they're getting to the point where they're able to do more billings with less cold calling, and they should be, you know, entering the glory years. Why did you pick that time to leave?
Uh-huh. And do you know anyone who's ever done that, or have you ever done that yourself, made a call like that?
I definitely did it. I joined a firm and definitely wanted to know what deep, dark secrets. I mean, they all have them. Almost every industry or any agency has dealt with huge amounts of turnover. You know, I'd like to find out what's going on, because you're not going to find it in an interview. These people are professional interviewers. Sometimes you have to, you know, like in the reference question, you know, do back channels.
Okay, so you called up this person from LinkedIn?
Yeah. Or anybody who is connected to them, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, so someone you didn't know before, you called up, and you asked that question, why did you leave? Okay, are you free to tell us the answer now? You know, someone might, you might not, that might be something secret. But the person told you, they were happy to talk with you?
Yeah, usually. I mean, you know, like anything else, people will omit a lot. I mean, you have to ask a lot of questions, but
I mean, there's plenty of situations where somebody does well, and that's where they start having problems at an agency firm. And again, it often relates to the owner, but I mean, you know, plenty of people leave at the top of their game.
I don't know if anyone, no one else is saying anything, but I'm kind of interested in this. What are the stories? What kind of answers do people get? Are you aware of many, or should I just move on?
Usually it comes down to, you know, an ownership that just doesn't support the long-term growth of that individual's desk in terms of not hiring sourcers. Usually it is a difference in perception in which the owner feels that anything that a biller asks for, you know, smacks of entitlement, or something else. But I mean, there's a lot of jealousy that certainly comes up, you know, and there's a lot of big egos at play,
and
that's always going to...
I know Kathy Manis is just totally bored. I can see it. Thank you, Kathy. I appreciate that kind of feedback, but I like the details. These jealousy issues, personality issues, what kind of things... I want specific stories. Like, what has happened that says, you know, I'm going to leave here? Like, was the boss, you know, saying, I'm not going to give you this fee that you think is coming to you? I mean, you've mentioned that if they don't, it's pretty clear that if they don't have a dedicated sourcer, internet sourcer, you don't think that's a firm worth working for. Is that right?
In this day and age, yeah, I couldn't take seriously any agency that didn't have somebody dedicated to that role, at least one
Kathy
person.
Kathy Manis, that's, you know,
yes.
Are you on the line? Is there something
I am.
You'd like to ask Larry Lebofsky? Go ahead. I appreciate your feedback on Twitter. Help me pick up the show if you think it's failing.
Well, I don't know how to save it, Animal. I'm sorry. I haven't listened in so long, and I come and listen to this, and I don't really know what I'm learning from it.
Okay. Well, if you're learning what to do when you want to make a change, and you've made a change. This guy can give you advice.
What advice can he give me? I don't get it.
You ought to know then, Kathy.
Yeah.
What?
You ought to know.
Kathy, why don't you ask a question?
She doesn't have any questions, she said.
I don't have any, other than questions about
the
Big Lebowski, my favorite movie. But other than that, I have nothing.
The dude about
it. You know, that movie was playing the week that I got married. It was so many people mentioned it that I didn't even see the movie for 10 years, and then I saw it, and now it's my favorite movie.
It's a great movie.
Okay. Great movie. Okay, Kathy, thanks for picking up the show with the Big Lebowski. Appreciate that. Okay,
that was
just
helpful.
Like Jerry.
Thanks, Kathy.
Yeah, just like Jerry. He doesn't ask a question. Okay, you know what? This is a Jerry's new question. It used to be Chris Fleek's. What's the best way to do business development? You told us going through the, you know, the trade journals and the PR, following these industry news aggregators. Is there any other way that you would recommend for doing business development?
Anything that's different than what everybody else is doing, which is pretty much taking a candidate to market, even if it's calling and saying, what's up, I love your Twitter feed. I mean, anything that speaks of differentiation usually is important. I mean, it really doesn't matter as long as you're making the call and that when they ask you questions in return, you sound somewhat decent, but I don't think 80% of recruiters are actually marketing at this point. They're just waiting for things to be called in. So if you can simply make a call and say anything, people don't realize how much you're going to be differentiating this day and age.
Really? And what about, you mentioned Twitter. Do you think, and I forgot to ask you the key to Twitter question, I'll get to it next week, but do you think that there's a lot of hiring managers on Twitter whom you could just, you know, make a list of them and call them every day, call a few every day?
Yeah, I think that's possible. To be honest, I haven't mastered Twitter. I mean, at this point, it's, you know, a 50-headed octopus, and I'm trying to figure out the six that are best for me.
You've mastered it.
Yeah,
that's it.
Exactly. But
crap.
But I don't really think it matters, you know, where you're picking up people. If you're following on Twitter, again, it's a differentiator when you're opening a conversation. Saw you on Twitter.
So let's say you saw. Let's say you were reading somebody on Twitter, VP of electronic payments or something like that. I don't know what kind of titles you market to. Let's say you saw that. you'd look the person up, you'd look the company up, get their phone number, get the, and you'd call up and talk. What would you say? What's the first thing you'd say to this person?
Well, the first thing I would do, I would send them a note through Twitter with maybe three quantifiable facts about my firm that's tailored to their specific company, probably, you know, quantifiable evidence of helping their competitors or partners if we have common you know, if one of my clients is one of their partners. So then when I make a call, it's going to basically list those and hope for an interruption, the old selling to veto approach. Start with a note with some numbers, call them up and see, you know, hopefully they remember you.
Selling somebody to veto, that gets marketed to every day, I hear those bullshit lines every single day, and it just drives me insane. I hang up. I don't even want to listen to it anymore.
No, that's good. However, you know, times 100 people, all I need is really five to listen.
So
I thought we weren't allowed
thing.
To curse on this show.
Wall,
I could have been cursing the whole time.
What's that?
What?
I could have been cursing the whole time. I didn't realize we could curse on this show.
Yeah.
No, there's no cursing. Did he say something? Oh, he's
skip the F-bomb,
yeah. He said
though.
The S-word.
S-word, I
yeah.
think, is okay.
Well, you know what? It's frowned upon. But I find this is an interesting conversation. And although I don't care, not everybody has to be interested. Sometimes I want to learn something. I don't think that people are going to respond very well necessarily to direct sales or direct marketing attempts on Twitter. Better if you just RT them and they notice you, and then a week later you phone them up.
Oh, yeah, pretend like you don't want to do business. You're just here to retweet something classic that the gentleman just said. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So
this
Jerry,
is
so
lame.
With,
this is all
Jerry,
lame,
you're,
man.
Jerry, you're agreeing with Lebowski then that you should say, hey, I see who you are. I want to do business with you.
No, man, you
got to
meet people. You.
Well, if you retweet something, they may notice you. But quite frankly, I'm looking for companies that are looking for solutions. So they may notice you, but I know if they're really looking for help, if I contact them directly and they need help and, you know, I don't sound like I suck and I'm asking the right questions, you know, after 15 years, I've got a pretty decent shot of getting their business.
Keep on playing
so
games with an animal.
Do, an animal asked you for was, what is your pitch? So I get 10 recruiters that call me a day. What are you going to say in 13 seconds that's going to get me to listen to you?
Is that a rhetorical question or?
No, what you're
going to call it. What are you going to say in 13 seconds?
I say, hey, Mike, I understand
you
used to be a successful recruiter and you've gone inside based on who knows what god-awful circumstances, but I'd like to help you out. I noticed
really
that you're looking for a Django developer. That's what I'd say.
Okay,
I've got to
tell you something. Go ahead, Lebowski.
No,
again, say where
the end. Again, I send a note or letter before the call and then reference back to it. So that, in effect, becomes the script and is hopefully something familiar that strikes a chord with the person I'm calling. It's a two-step process.
I get 1,700 pieces of junk mail a day. What makes you think I'm going to read your email? I'm actually trying to get something out of you, and you're ignoring it.
Can
what,
I be the
what is in your pitch that's going to get my attention?
It really depends on what your industry is. I mean, I appreciate, you know, the challenge and all and the, you know, the persona. But again, I'm going to send an original note that is going to have something tailored to you specifically in your industry, in your place, based on my experience. So the pitch will be something that is specific to you to begin with.
Okay,
could
so you
share
saw
an
that
example?
We got.
Guys,
we
should
got
I be the one to tell Lebowski? Should I tell him?
No, being serious here.
Dude,
so
you're not,
me a
this
note
isn't
that
the right career for
I just
you,
read
man.
In the Boston Business Journal that you got $12 million of VC funding. Congratulations, you know how to read the goddamn Boston Business Journal. What sets you apart? I'm trying to get you to answer, but you don't seem to be able to answer.
Okay, fifth time, okay? What I'm saying is I am specifically reaching out to people who are similar to ones I've worked with and giving some type of success story quantified with a company that I've worked with in your industry. If that doesn't resonate with you, you can delete it, and if you're the type who would delete something like that within a company, you're not the person I want to work with anyway.
Could you
just share your most recent example?
So I hire land staff developers for startups in Boston. So has 2,000 other third-party recruiters, and probably worked for some of my competitors and companies that share venture capitalists with us and all of that. That doesn't differentiate you. What are you going to say to me on the phone in 13 seconds that's going to make me say, wow, this guy can fill my racks?
I can't imagine what I could answer that I haven't already said.
Okay.
So you can't answer
Here's
the question.
Here's what's going to happen. Next week,
I can only answer the question five times.
Lebowski, next week. Lebowski, next week, when you come on, we're gonna ask for some real stories about cold calls that you've made like this. Is that fair? Real stories,
yeah, that's
Sun
fair.
Generals? Okay. Lebowski, it's been great having you on. I like the information you're giving, and I like it that my audience can say they don't. But I do. He's going to be back next week on the second half of the show. I want to thank my good friend, Charles A. Krugel, K-R-U-G-E-L, the greatest lawyer in Chicago. Thank you, everybody!
Man.
So I've been a part of the Recruiting Animal show for like 3 years now.
Yep.
Hands down, worst guest ever. All ego, no substance.
Wow.
No wonder
now,
why.
That's a bit heavy-handed.
That's how I feel. I gave him the opportunity to make. I gave him the opportunity to shine, and he couldn't.
But I've got an issue with that. You're expecting someone to have like a canned line. Dude, I have no idea what I would tell you. It would be based on the circumstances that led me to call you. It might be that somebody said, yeah, I just interviewed with this guy over at whatever the hell place you're working, and I would call you. It might be that I saw your ad while I was digging for a position for a guy I just interviewed 3 days ago. I mean, who knows what it would be? And I think the best recruiters are people that don't have a canned line and are able to recite it 1,000 times in a row. That dude is a champion. Back to you, Mike.
$4 million in billing over 15 years comes to $266 a year. I did the math, right?
Yeah.
I consider a $250 a year recruiter average.
Let's be real, man. Most recruiters are not making $250,000 a year.
In fact,
Steve, I hope most of the ones on the show are.
Jerry, my business is different because, you know, obviously I'm billing HR consultants and recruiters hourly.
Right.
You know, for RPO type projects.
Yep. I'm with
my
you.
My desk was over $500,000 last year.
Okay. That's cool, man.
I'm just saying. 266 is average. That's not a top biller to me. You're a top biller, and you cannot tell me your desk is not worth more than 266.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, regardless of my billing, if I was doing 266 a year and I owned the company.
But he doesn't. He works for MRI, right?
I don't think so. I think he's his own guy now. Can anybody clarify that? Anybody?
Nope. Wasn't listening then.
To the earlier point, Mike, when you were asking him for specifics, he said that he would simply reference earlier correspondence that he had with you. I would suppose you do that from time to time, right?
But then he sent me a spam email. I mean, one of my clients just got VC funding. Every friggin' recruiter in Boston called me and said, hey, congratulations. Hey, thanks a lot. Call me when you got something to add.
Right. No, I'm saying he said that he would tailor the correspondence to you, and then follow up with a phone call. I don't see why that was so difficult to, you know, if he can't
get
in 13 seconds by referencing what he had earlier said.
They do not mess around on the East Coast, Travis. They want you to call them up and say, hey, I saw you ran an ad for a ham sandwich. I have a ham sandwich fresh out of the oven. I'm on my way. Can I drop by and put this on your desk? That's what they want.
I would
want you to talk about
an interview with the ham sandwich.
A variety of sandwiches and spaghettis and stuff and what you like to eat in restaurants. They want a ham sandwich delivered. Right, Mike?
I would rather have that or, you know, listen, I don't run the biggest company in the world, but 80% of my business is referral business. Call me up and tell me, hey, I used to work with your VP of engineering, or hey, you just hired John Smith as a software engineer. I know that guy. Put some personal reference to it.
I think that's what
he
was saying, though. That's what he was saying.
No, he said, oh, I saw you at such and such trade show. Well, so did anybody that read the Boston Business Journal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the point is he's saying that he's trying to think on his feet and say, okay, well, I'm going to take something and I'm going to relate it to you. And if that doesn't work with you, then that's fine, dude. Just delete my email. So,
you know what? Personal
things
relate
to
me. Get on LinkedIn and see who the people that work in my company are and find some kind of personal connection there.
I would just change my LinkedIn picture to some hot woman and then send you a LinkedIn message and be like, hey, I think you're cute.
Oh, I would definitely
think you're cute. Help me make a placement or I'm going to get fired.
He'd probably call you back with no shirt on a video camera.
Do you have Skype?
You know what the bottom line becomes? I didn't like this guy from minute one because, as you well know, Jerry, the reason I do like you, even though Hannibal thinks we hate each other, the reason I do like you is because even though you have a persona online of being egotistical, you're really not. The people that I like in this business are not people that come off with egos and I'm the greatest friggin' recruiter that ever lived. Guys that talk to me straight and are cards on the table are people I react to. 2 seconds in, I can feel this guy's ego.
All right, give me a score for him and Animal. Start us off, Mike.
Uh-oh.
This should be good.
You said anybody gets 50 for showing up. Are you changing that?
All right, 51.
Here comes the 50.7 out of Mike.
You know what? I'll give him a 60, and you know, he gets it for being a slightly above-average recruiter.
All right. Okay.
And I'm going to give Animal 85 today. I really actually like the first part. I don't know why he only has that lawyer come on for 10 or 15 minutes at a time.
That
he should
good.
Do a whole show with that lawyer. He's good.
Hey, on a side note, man, can you dig up a Django developer resume in Boston for me? Mike, contractor.
Probably not.
Come on, man. Please.
Let me make one other comment, if I may.
Yeah.
The whole let's negotiate a severance package before the person is hired. Does no one else see why that's such a huge red flag for me? I mean, seriously, if I'm hiring a recruiter, for example, and they won't talk to me about a severance package when I've talked about expectations, get the hell out of my office. Now, leave. Get out.
Yeah, I think that's more along the C-level VP director kind of person. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to hire a VP of sales that's going to ask me about a severance package. Get out.
Hey, Marissa Mayer negotiated her severance before she walked into Yahoo, I'm sure.
Yep. Nice name dropping, Travis.
Yeah, thanks. I've been trying to bug.
Yeah, well, she's got a nice rack, so I might have negotiated with her.
All right, other scores. Travis, what do you think about the show?
I didn't get to tune into the whole thing, so I'd rather not partake in the scoring.
No, you have to give a score, or you're banned for 90 days. No severance.
Oh, man.
No severance?
No severance.
Take a lot.
Couldn't we have
somebody should give Animal a severance package.
Couldn't we have negotiated the severance on the front end of this?
Yeah, well, since we didn't, give me two scores, man. I know you can handle it. Make something up.
I'll give 70. 70 and 75. 75 for Animal.
All right. Hey, who's outside? I didn't learn
a whole lot on this one.
Somebody out having a cigarette right now and doesn't have us on mute.
Yeah, sorry, I'll
meet
you.
No, not me.
That's Mikey.
Hey, Mike, if you bring that boat over here, I'll give you $5,000 for it.
You give me what
nice
for
boat.
It? You give me what for it?
I'll give you $5,000 if you deliver it. Slip 44B, Fenwick Marina, on Lake
you
Erie. Swing it in
I,
there, and I'll give you $5,000 for it.
If
you
that
realize
motorcycle
if I sunk it,
years
I'd get three times that.
If
What'd
that motorcycle of yours, if the motorcycle of yours is sitting on the back of the boat, Mike, we'll give you 10.
Yeah. Actually, when Hurricane Sandy came through, I ran to the marina hoping that thing had gone off the bank because I'll get three times what I'm asking for it in insurance.
Right. Okay, who else would like to chime in here? Help us out.
This is Casey. I will give the guest. Now, I only caught like 15 minutes of the show, so I only caught the degeneration of the show. I'm going to give the guest
a
70.
The whole thing then, right?
So that's the best part.
It was pretty good. So actually give him a 75, give Animal an 85 for ensuring chaos was ensued.
How's New Orleans treating you?
It's nice and warm and sunny, and there's lots of sundresses and
tube
tops walking around. Yeah, it's beautiful scenery.
So did you get an apartment down there, or, I mean, you in a camper, a tent? What are you doing down there?
I just live on the street.
That's excellent.
Now I got a
That's
little
a great
house
street
here.
To live on there.
Yeah, well, it's got a lot of folks on it. You know, it's a good neighborhood. It's really coming up, so, you know, a little tent city down under the overpass.
Nice. Well, there's still probably a pretty good shot of getting a FEMA trailer for like $200, isn't it?
Well, I think that. I don't know if I can get one used at this point because they're like biodegradable. They just start breaking down, rusting, and everything else.
Oh.
It's a real shame.
Bummer.
Just have to wait for a real storm to happen.
Well, good luck down there, Casey.
Well, thank you so much.
Who else is on the phone here? Anybody? Rebecca?
Amy Alla's here.
Amy!
Hi.
Amy Alla?
What? Did you guys miss me?
She never said anything the whole show.
I know.
You didn't say anything?
I'm still recovering. I know. It was hard. Because I got bored and I started doing work. And
it was a boring show, wasn't it?
It must have been really boring if you were doing work.
This is what I learned. This is what I learned. We all do the same damn thing. There is no magic bullet. There is no super formula. We are not that flippin' different. And I'm so tired of hearing that. Well, I'm Super Recruiter, and I have this amazing technique, personality, blah, blah, blah. It's such nonsense. I mean, I'm just at a point now, America. I just call people up. I'm like, listen, I need a tick mark. Will you talk to me? You know? Screw it. Be honest. I'm trying to get people hired, man. You want to talk? Let's talk.
Right.
I don't have anything special to say. So.
Employer of choice.
Yeah.
I didn't say that my company approved. I just said that's what I do.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm the same way.
I don't know. I'm really tired of that whole, you know, I'm so awesome because I have all these super secret techniques. No, you don't. We're all doing the same damn thing. Shut it.
You know what?
You did a better job of saying...
You did a better job of saying exactly how I feel. I just can't stand getting
right?
those calls anymore.
I know. Well, I knew that's what you meant. I knew that's exactly where you were coming from. It's not our opportunity that's different. It's not our message that's different. It's the timing and it's having what the person wants. I mean, somebody who will be receptive to taking a call from me because they want to work at my employer, you know, that's great, but the person who wants to work for Jerry probably isn't going to want to talk to me, and that's fine. It's just we just do different things in that sense. But, you know, as far as recruiting strategy, we're all doing the same damn thing.
That's why everybody leans on the social media so much is because that's the newest waste.
Newest way to go
shiny
broke.
Toys.
Yeah,
shiny toys.
So what are your scores then, Amy?
I will give both of them 50.
Mm.
50-50.
Not even 50.7.
Okay. No, not even 50.7. Do you think we can talk Animal out of having him on next week?
See, that's going to
nosedive
the show.
I've been gone for a while. Look what's happened.
Hey, the guy might come back next week just fired up and ready to go, too, so.
I don't think the more successful recruiters are into this role play your cold call with Animal thing.
Yeah, thanks.
Seriously. Because it is always a case by case thing. Each call is really based on you've thought about it a little bit, you've got some info, there's a specific reason for the call. And you put all these ingredients together, and get on the phone with somebody. So to do this off the cuff, give me your recruiting call, give me your marketing call, that's when the show starts to go to hell.
But don't you think people, if somebody's been spent the last 15 years cold calling, they could at least give us a generic example of what they might say when they pick up the phone?
I'd be hard-pressed to. Sometimes
no.
It's because I met somebody at a conference. Sometimes it's because we had some exchange on, you know, Facebook about somebody's guitar or what. I mean, it could be anything. It could be, hey, I know you're friends with Mike, and we talked, 2 years ago, and here's why I'm calling you now. It could be anything. It could be everything. Have I said too much?
That's true.
If you're going to
cold
call me, Jerry, please tell me you're going to buy my boat.
Yeah, I'll buy your boat, but let's get a few hires out of the way, and I'll come out there and pick that thing up, and you'll never see it again.
It's going to be at the
hire
of the
10
ocean.
People, and I'll make sure that your boat is off your personal ownership dole.
You guys take it easy. I got to bounce.
All right, man. See ya. And I have to, too. Anybody else have a score that didn't give it to us? Because I got to call a guy at 1:15, and that's 4 minutes ago.
Hey, this is Michael down here in San Antonio.
Hey, Texas. Yep.
Hey there. I would say give each one of them a 70. Animal could have done better. The one thing I wanted from Animal, this guy kept talking about his email and how it's so much different and how often he does that. It seems to be the one thing that he's hitched his trailer to that's led him to all this success. Why didn't he just ask him to go through his email? Tell you what, next week if he's going to be on, he has to read off that email that got him that last placement that was so awesome because he referenced some sort of a ambiguous...
The company he built, helped a guy build.
Yeah, something, but if he's saying that this technique that he's using has created this massive business or book of business that he's got, Let's pull back the curtain a little bit and see what that exactly is. But he keeps referencing it, but not actually walking us through it. I don't think it actually exists. It's not something pretty, but I think he's gotten really good at presenting that thing that he does.
Gotcha.
That'll be a pretty special email.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd probably go something like this. Hey, I noticed you online, and I'm getting a bunch of people together, and we're going to go hit the bars later, and wanted to know if you'd like to maybe join us, and get some slammed, and they're ready to work.
Yeah, since we're all junkies and all.
Hey, so Mike, what's the story on your boat? No trailer, right? You guys don't keep trailers out east?
It's too big to trailer, Jerry. It's 12 and a half feet from the water line to the top of the radar arch, and it's with pulpit and swim platform about 32 and a half feet long.
It'll hold
But what's the width on it? What's the beam on it? 12 foot?
I believe it's 12, yeah.
Uh-huh.
The problem is I wanted to have it transported to the,
transport
to the Jersey Shore, and they told me it was too tall to get under power lines.
It's only available to somebody that wants to more or less keep it right where it is.
Right where it is, they could take, it's about an eight-hour trip, but they could take it from Delaware River in Philadelphia down to the Jersey Shore.
Huh. I might have to come out there and just, take it on a test drive for 3 or 4 days.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You never know. All right, everybody, I hope you have a great week. I got to get back to work. You're all free to keep talking, but I have to make a call. Love you all. Bye.
All right, we've all left on the show.
You're the one that's fucked up here, not me!
Animal would like to know, Michael, have you had any success with hiring from your talent network or talent pipeline or talent communities?
We have hired 15 people as a result of the pipeline, and I know that we're adding 4 or 5 more this month. So I think that's successful. It's shortened our time to fill, our cost per hire, the cost of turnover. We've done it all, and I think 15 hires is a good start in the first 6 months.
Which is why none of it was new or, insightful.
You didn't think my picture, my photo information was new? Have you ever done a search on that like that?
No, I probably never will.
I do image, news, and photo and video searches every day.
For what? For what reason?
To find people, to get to know people, so that when I make a call, it is not a cold call. Not on my end, anyway.
Really? So you'll spend five days trying to find a picture of somebody in
five days? I think
sporting
events,
so you can say, "Hey, you like that volleyball game? So do I. Yeah, that's really cool. We have a lot in common. Hey, can I tell you about my product?"
All right, so 18 years in the industry, started with a family firm, recruiting industry.
Oh, there you have it.
Started
Gary,
with
wake
a family
up.
Firm.
You recommended this guy. Go ahead.
I mentioned it offhand when I was in a drunken stupor.
Don't ask Jerry for advice after 5 p.m. Okay, go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, God.
You know, you guys, I have to say, no banning on this show. Nobody's that bad.
Here's the deal. The dude is full of negative energy, and I'm just saying I simply don't. The after show is not about negativity. It's not
about.
What?
Jerry. If you open your eyes, you'd see he talks to you just like you talk to me. It's constantly, Animal is an idiot. Everything he says is nonsense. I used to like the show, but now it's nothing.
Yep.
I don't kick you off.
Hey.
I don't kick you off the show, and
hey,
you're not
going
to kick him off, okay?
Hey, I just don't need it. If he is ready to say that he's done with it, then I embrace his participation.
So Amy Bess is a good communicator.
Where does whiskey fit in with
recharging?
Does that make me an introvert?
That doesn't make her an extrovert.
Yes, Jerry.
She recharges by
Jerry, if you drink alone, then you're an introvert.
What if I drink alone, but I call a lot of people all night long because I want to talk to somebody?
Then you're an extrovert.
While you're drinking,
okay.
Then you're an alcoholic, but that's okay.
I don't think that can be underestimated.
Well, Marco, let me
cut
in.
That is shocking. I'm just jumping in to say that is shocking. Okay, I'm back to listening.
Isn't that funny? When I start to talk, finally get a chance to start talking, the mouthpiece comes in. Go ahead, Jer. Take over.
Well, you know, it's like you're a puppet, and it's Jerry's voice. He's the ventriloquist.
Hey, I was just interjecting. I'm not taking over. I was just interjecting.